I'm here with Nora Yunus, human rights activist, journalist, and blogger, who is the website chief editor of Al Masri Al Youm, one of the best-known newspapers in Egypt. And I'm happy to say that Nora Yunus today becomes the first person to have appeared on the Global Observatory for the second time. She was here in September at a conference we did on the Arab Spring. So, Nora, welcome back. I wanted to ask you, just first of all, the protests and the activism in which you played a role had its original purpose, getting a one ruler and one government out. And now, of course, those same people are working towards creating in Egypt a more representative society. Can I ask you how that is going, and how are the tactics and talents that you learned in overthrowing the existing government working to replace it with something more representative?
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here again. And well, actually, we managed to get rid of the ruler, but not the regime, because we think that we are still run by military rule from President Nasser's time, passing by Sadat and then Mubarak and now Tantawi. So we haven't got rid of the regime yet. And also the regime is trying to reinvent and reinstate itself. And it's also very shocking to us how even now the Islamic power is also getting to look very much like the Mubarak regime. I mean, you watch the parliament sessions on TV in Egypt, and you look at the head of the parliament, who is a Muslim Brotherhood man, and he just reminds you of Fatih Sroor, the former head of the parliament, who was Mubarak's man. So, and many figures within the Muslim Brotherhood are coming more and more to look like the old regime, to speak like the old regime, and to act like the old regime. So from one side, the military is trying to control the scene. And from another side, the ruling power now, the Islamists, not really ruling, but at least they control the parliament so far, they're heading for the government next. Are also not giving us the feeling that we have reached where we want. But I'm sure that this is not going to last for long, because also the people have been pushing, and they are still pushing, and will continue to push. And it's very inspiring how Egypt looks like today. If I can just improvise and share with you some images I've seen. In Egypt, at the heart of Cairo, in Tahrir Square, the AUC walls look like San Francisco, with all the graffiti and the murals. And one would think that because this is Cairo, this is the capital, but a couple of months ago, I was in Luxor in Upper Egypt, and I saw marvelous anti-military graffiti on the walls of the military school in Luxor. So I can tell you about homemade music, pop music that's homemade and uploaded to YouTube, and then 3 days later, very protest songs, I mean, I'm talking about, and very inspiring protest songs that actually managed to convince the people of why the revolution has to continue. And this song was a particular song called the Mahragan al-Sawra Mustamirra, was actually made by a Twitter activist and put on YouTube, and then suddenly, 3 days later, it had hundreds of thousands of views, and it was transferred from the internet to the buses, the microbus drivers, the taxis. You can hear it everywhere. It just, I don't know how it moved from YouTube to microbuses, but it was amazing, and it really had a lot of logic and was very convincing, and it was the work of one young man. So the Egyptian protest movement is very, very vibrant, and what makes me very confident that it's going to continue is that generations, people that are much younger than me, the reference now is January 2011. This is the reference. This is when they think about, you know, power, about activism, about will, about the feeling of usness. The reference point is January 2011. They haven't seen anything else. And now the protest movement is very engaging to school students, not just, needless to speak about how the university movement looks like now. And let's not forget also that 60% of the Egyptian population are young people. And all those young people have seen what happened. So I'm sure that even if it doesn't work out fine now, even if the revolution does not win now, I am sure that those people who have seen, who felt their power, their real power, and who felt they are able to overcome those troops of state security forces, who were able to live through this violence and win at the end in a peaceful way, who were able to overthrow Mubarak and all his gang, I'm sure that these people will continue and will win.
Nora, half the Egyptian population, of course, are women. And we remember in Tahrir Square how many women there were. We also remember the attacks on women in Tahrir Square. Are women organized themselves now in the midst of the protest to demand their rights and their representation? And are they being represented?
The women are at the forefront in the labor movement, in the democratic struggle, in the protest movement, everywhere. And we have seen attacks by the military on women. It was caught on camera, on television camera, in different ways. There's a very famous images of the blue bra woman who's an Islamist, who was a political activist. She's an Islamist, and she was veiled and wearing a abaya, and the military beat her, tore off her clothes so that she was naked and stripped to a blue bra. And it was a very, very shocking image. This image, among other cases, like the case of Samira Brahim, the protester who was arrested by the army from the sit-in in Tahrir and was subjected to a virginity test while she is in the military prison. Such stories awaken the conscience of the Egyptian society, men and women. And both incidents were followed by massive demonstration and mainly women demonstrations, women protests. The level of vibrance of the Egyptian society now is beyond the capacity of any structure to contain it. I cannot tell you that the women will be organized. The women are too many to be organized. I mean, really, following the images of the blue bra, it was like a million women in the street. There is no institution that can organize such a number. It was massive. It was impressive. There are groups, NGOs and groups and coalition that are women-based or with a women agenda, and they have a coalition together and they try to organize and issue statements and lobbying and do action on the ground. So this exists as well. What I am mostly worried about is that as much as we have seen in experiences in Western Europe and in other places in the world, that when it's time for action, women are there on the ground. When it's time for government, women are not on the table. And this is very shocking, really, and this would make me feel very sorry if it really happened in Egypt again.
Now, I want to ask you about freedom of the press in Egypt, and I want to ask it in the context of a movie that you made this year called Reporting a Revolution, which is about reporters suddenly being in an activist situation, and I think one of the reporters in the movie is you.
Yes, the film is about, it's a very funny story, this film. It's about six reporters, and I'm one of them, and the six are in my unit, the video unit, and we made the film about ourselves, actually, because we all had a story to share. So the film is made by us, and we are in the film, and it's about our job, and it's about us doing our job, and it's about what we did. When we were producing the film, it was actually a group therapy. The making of the film was a group therapy because we were taken by accident. I mean, we were covering a demonstration, basically, like we do every time, and suddenly it became a revolution. And suddenly there was a lot of bloodshed and snipers and peaceful protesters being run over by cars. And The journalists found themselves, instead of holding their cameras, they found the people yelling at them, like, what are you doing? Why are you filming? Help me carry this injured man. Like, what can you do? And then when you're so angry and when your hands, when you carry the injured man and when your hands are full of his blood, what do you do next? Do you go stone throwing on the police or do you go back to hold your camera? And also, every one of us witnessed the points of rise, I mean, high points and low points of the revolution. In every day of the 18 days, there were days that you felt that the Egyptians are very close to overthrowing Mubarak. And there were other days that you felt that it's not going to happen. And the low points were the most challenging to reporters because we are not just covering an event. This determines our future and the future of our children. It involves us. I mean, in a very personal, in a very personal story, it's our very personal interest. So it was, each one asked himself and herself at some point whether they should stay being a journalist or they would join the protest movement. And each one tried to stay sane, regardless of all what they saw and regardless of their decision about professionalism. And it was all very difficult. And the revolution did not end until today. So basically, after the 18 days, we had to keep working and working and covering. And there was a lot of clashes afterwards and a lot of bloodshed and a lot of anti-military movement and violent aggression on to the protesters, to the peaceful protests. So everything continued. And the only chance we had is like to make this film and talk to each other about it and share things with each other. So this is a very long story, but I just wanted to tell you like how we felt doing it. And then it was selected for the Berlinale, the Berlin Film Festival, and we were very happy and proud from going from very personal to international.
Well, Nora Yudis, thank you so much for sharing those personal observations with us. Your personal observations are observations of a society at large and very valuable for us to hear. And I hope you will come back in another 8 months and update us on the revolution in Egypt. Thank you.